Major sighting here.
This transmission is coming to you.
Kind of a eerie feeling.
You got it.
This transmission is coming to you.
I see dead people.
This transmission is coming to you.
All the place.
Holy.
You got it.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
You got it.
All right, you want to go?
You got it.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
Herod Normal, somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
There's no doubt in your mind, John, that the U.S. military holds the ability to time travel.
Oh, of course.
Do you believe there's been a cover-up by NASA?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow, that's a remarkable question.
Hello? Hello?
It's coming from out there.
Out where?
Watch your step. Hide under your blankets. Whatever you do, prepare yourself for what you're about to hear.
You want my head to explode?
You're riding into the paranormal.
Doomsday. End of times. The apocalypse. Why are we fascinated with all of this? Good evening from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I'm Jeremy Scott. Now, if you're new to this program, we are an alternative media source. The stories that you hear on this program, although sourced on the website, are pretty much in the minority and out of the mainstream. These are stories that don't get talked about by the majority of media. And you see, some will take this information in one ear, and it will go right out the other ear, and they are no wiser to the situation than when we began. Now, I'm going to fill you in on everything that I speak of because I want you to know what's going on. I think that there is something going on. I think we are on the edge of something. And what that something may be only will be known in time. But last week on the program, there were a series of events that I outlined in which I believe are not a coincidence. And really, there are more examples than that in which I gave last week on the program, which will also go to making this point. Now, when I bring my guest on tonight, Dr. Joseph Felser, author of The Myth of the Great Ending, Why We've Been Longing for the End of Days Since the Beginning of Time. What a great title. I'm going to ask him about what he feels about this current day and age in which we live in, because we are on the precipice of something. I'll get to that here in just a moment. But have you heard, friends? The White House is being inundated with extraterrestrial reports. That's right. You see, President Trump has indeed called for tips about illegal immigration, about criminal aliens, and instead, the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement Office, or VOICE, as it is known, has been inundated. Their hotline, that is, has been absolutely overwhelmed with people reporting alien encounters. Now, it may have had something to do with the fact that Alien Day was this past week. It also may have had something to do with the fact that the X-Files was recently renewed for a 11th season. 1-855-48-VOICE. That has been overwhelmed. In fact, one person, a Marine Corps veteran, says he called the hotline wanting to report that he had been abducted by a UFO and was on hold for about 20 minutes before speaking with someone who asked him if he was calling to report a crime committed by an illegal alien. And the conversation went on. But these are real things. People are calling this line, and that's just one account. They are holding up the line for others. I'm not sure how many actual legitimate reports they have gotten, but I know they have gotten quite a many number of extraterrestrial reports. Now, if it's people pulling their leg, or these are really people telling the God's honest truth, either way, it's still kind of hilarious, at least if you ask me. Telephone number, 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. You can always Skype into the program. We've got the button for you to click at paranormalradio.com. As I mentioned tonight, we're going to be talking about doomsday, about end of times, about the apocalypse with Dr. Joseph Felser. He is a PhD. If you are paying attention, friends, there are some weird trends that are happening on multiple levels that give you the perception that we probably are headed for some sort of disaster. Maybe something the levels of what started The Walking Dead, or shows such as The 4400. Talk about being ahead of their times. And by the way, I did start watching that new show on Netflix while we're talking about television shows. Awesome. I love it. I'm talking about Bill Nye, back with his brand new show, Saves the World. Bill, saves the world. Anybody out there check out that show? Anyway, it's my new favorite. I'll be binging it tonight and tomorrow. I'm at like episode 5 or 6. Back to the topic at hand, though. After all those crazy things that I talked about on the program last week, right at the beginning, there are even more to add to the list. Power outages in major cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and even on the East Coast in New York City. Now, the most interesting part about any of these situations is the fact that there is no explanation. You know, we talk about those mysterious noises and explosions and whatever the heck is going on that is rumbling parts of this world day in and day out. Okay, maybe we go a couple weeks between reports. But certainly there are a ton of those reports. And so there is something going on, whether it's preparations for something or not. Like I said, only time will tell. But if they can simulate a power outage at the same time in major U.S. cities, imagine the ramifications of that. Just take a step back and think about that. That's pretty freaking damning, if you ask me. The ability to take down the power grid. Now, EMP certainly has been a threat that has been talked about for a long time. I certainly have been fascinated by that and plan to do an upcoming program on the threat of electromagnetic pulse. And so maybe that's what this was. But again, even if it was an EMP, maybe this is a sign of what is to come. Because if they can take down the power grid, you know, and they can jam communications and they can do all these other things that they have been doing, well, it leads you to question. At least it leads me to question. You can read more about that story up at paranormalradio.com. But there was even a story last year in the Wall Street Journal that warned that our electric grid is woefully out of date and completely vulnerable to attack. I'm interested if my guest, Joseph Felser, would have something to say about that. We're talking about an EMP. Speaking of Dr. Felser, he is a professor at Kingsborough Community College in the City University of New York. He graduated from Boston University and received his doctorate in philosophy. Easy for me to say, from the University of Chicago. He currently serves on the board of directors of the Monroe Institute. Felser has been interested in parapsychology and the paranormal since childhood. He explores these spiritual questions raised by all of these enduring myths around end of times in his book, The Myth of the Great Ending, Why We've Been Longing for the End of Days Since the Beginning of Time. And Dr. Joseph Felser, welcome to Into the Paranormal.
Thank you, Jeremy. I'm delighted to be here.
It's certainly my pleasure to have you here. Since the topic so far has been about the power grid, are you at all concerned about the threat of an EMP?
No, I wasn't listening to the first part of the show, so I don't know what the discussion was about.
But I mean, just in general, are you concerned with the threat of an EMP or an electromagnetic pulse?
Not particularly. I mean, look, I know that there are things that we ought to be concerned about, and they've been around for a long time, all kinds of things, and I guess, you know, we should be concerned, but I wouldn't get upset. you know, I grew up as a child in the Cold War, so I'm a Cold War baby, and I remember, I have memories of the Cuban Missile Crisis and things like mutually assured destruction, and when I was a kid, we used to have air raid drills in school where you go into the hallway and lay down like, you know, sardines end to end. And, you know, I didn't even know what an air raid was. And in my mind, I was thinking about, you know, World War II airplanes. And, you know, it wasn't until a little bit later on that, you know, I realized that what they were talking about was the A-bomb and all of that. And then, you know, Dr. Strangelove and Failsafe and all of these fictional versions of apocalypse, and certainly that was for me the genesis of, you know, part of my interest in this whole topic of the end of the world. And so we've had all kinds of things. We had you know, the environmental issues. We've had in 2000 we had not only the millennialists but the Y2K and the fears of computer crash and and later on we had the clash of civilizations after the 2001. So there's no question that, you know, there are things to be concerned about. And of course, you know, Woody Allen and that Annie Hall said, you know, he didn't want to do his homework anymore because, you know, someday the sun is going to burn itself out. So I think that I'm not minimizing the things of real concern, but my interest was, why do we keep this idea alive, no matter what the facts are? And so that was my genesis of my interest in the book.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Felser, what does your gut tell you? Are we on the verge of something?
Well, I guess it depends. I mean, I think, are we on the verge of something? I mean, something terrible, something bad? I mean, I don't know quite how to answer that. I mean, I think if you look at the idea of the end of the world and you look at its genesis, there was always an end of the world. If you look to the most ancient beliefs of humankind, of course there was an end. There was death. And so just as there was death of the individual, so you would have death of people, civilizations, pre-civilizations. But in those good old days, you might say, the idea of an ending was what you might call a soft ending. And time was regarded as a cycle. And it was a natural part of the life was to live and die, but it was always renewed. And I think the idea was that that things were always renewing because creation was always renewing. The creation wasn't something that happened a long time ago in a galaxy far away, but it was happening right now. And so nothing that came into existence would ever really leave existence. It would just be transformed in some way, shape, or form. So there would be cycles. There would be growth. There would be decay. But even from decay, there would be life. And so you have the idea of reincarnation and rebirth and the constant cycles of nature. You know, here we are. It's spring again, and we're going through a cycle of renewal. And, you know, ancient peoples noticed this cyclical process in nature, and they identified with it. And then something happened, I think, in people's thinking when we started trying to master nature as opposed to go with it. And I think that all began, I think, with the agricultural revolution and around 8,000 BCE. And we started becoming more distant from those cycles. And we created a process, a hierarchical set of civilizations that depended upon conquest, warfare, and it drove, I think, a very different view of history and time. And this view of linear time came into existence. And at the same time, I think, as Joseph Campbell points out, there was kind of a pessimistic turn. People started thinking life was terrible, and when is it going to end? And I think that, you know, I don't want to simplify it and oversimplify it, but, you know, from my way of thinking about it, it's like if you're having a good time, you don't want it to end. And so I think that when human beings started creating more problems for themselves and started becoming distant from their own nature as well as nature at large, I think there's a pessimism that creeped in. And there was a longing for release from that, and even in the even in those traditions that kept the idea of cyclical time, like the Asian traditions, you have then an emphasis on getting out of the cycle as opposed to just maintaining it. And so I think it has to do. I think our preoccupation with this has to do almost like with it's almost like a post-traumatic stress disorder. And the original stress, I think, was the creation of what we call civilization, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. So, Dr. Felser, I mean, as a whole, society is fascinated, I think, with Doomsday, certainly about, you know, thinking about it. You know, there's a threat every day or week that goes by of somebody, you know, believing that you know, we're in the end of days and that the countdown is on, and yet those events continue to go by, and yet we're still here. Why are we fascinated with something that in your and my lifetime and our ancestors' lifetimes has never come true?
Well, I mean, I think you put your finger on it in a way that it is fascinating. I mean, I think there are psychological reasons. I think there are social reasons, sociological reasons. I mean, if you think I was in college in the late 70s when the Jonestown thing happened. And that was a really interesting moment because, you know, you had, it looked to me like an enactment, you might say, of that kind of apocalyptic mentality. And you had 900 people that were either murdered or willingly committed suicide. I mean, I guess there's still a mystery there as to exactly what happened. But in any case, it was a frightening thing. And I think the power, first of all, of the idea of an ending, not as a natural occurrence, but as a kind of, you know, in the biblical traditions, the ending comes about as a kind of moral judgment or as a reflection of moral decay. And I think that has a very powerful, what do you call it, glue. It strengthens people's resolve. It gives them a sense of something to work for. It gives them a sense of solidarity, us versus them, the good people that are going to be saved versus the evil people that are trying to destroy us or that will be destroyed. And so I think that it's a very powerful thing You know, in the early years of the church, I mean, it became known as the great non-event because, you know, Jesus himself talks in the New Testament in Mark 13 about the end of the world, and it's going to come, and it's going to come soon. And so it solidified the early Christian community. The predictions didn't happen, and so it became known as the great non-event. People kept saying, well, it's not going to happen now. But, you know, Harold Camping a few years ago kept saying, well, it's going to happen in 93 or 94, and then it was 2011. So I think there's a psychological power, and I think there's a sociological power in that it unites groups and gives them a sense of solidarity and identity, group identity. And I remember reading things at the time when Camping's predictions were you know, high on the list, and there were people that said, well, you know, they stopped saving for their retirement, they you know, they didn't have a plan B, they were hoping it would come true because it would relieve them of the responsibility of, for thinking about the future. And so I think it has a kind of attraction and a kind of, you know, it's almost like a thrill ride. You know, it's awful, but it's wonderful. And so it's thrilling and it's terrifying and it's it is fascinating. So I think there's a lot of reasons for it.
Harold Camping, by the way, is the figure, the religious speaker who basically claimed that about 200 million people were going to be raptured and that Jesus was going to return in 2011. He actually made this prediction on multiple occasions, and yet it never came true.
Right, right, yes. And of course, all of them don't come true. I mean, that's the thing. And so you have this sort of manic depressive. It whips people up into a frenzy. And then they're disappointed, and then they say, then they have to go back, and they say, "Well, we have to recalculate." And so this is, you know, there were the Millerites in the 19th century.
Hold that thought, Dr. Joseph Felser. We've got a break for the bottom of the hour news with John Jeter coming up, as we will get into stories including SETI efforts taking center stage, and even a celebrity UFO encounter, and then more with Dr. Joseph Felser, Doomsday, tonight.
Subscribe to Into the Paranormal on your favorite apps, iTunes, Google Play Music, Spreaker, Stitcher, and more at ParanormalRadio.com.
This is Paranormal News. I'm John Jeter. Are these extraterrestrial signals? The 10-year, $100 million Breakthrough Listen Project, said to be the largest of SETI projects, is putting its bets on 11 potentially promising signals found by a telescope. The preliminary findings have been sent to leading astronomical journals. Anyone interested in analyzing these messages can do so by downloading the data. As for actual proof of an extraterrestrial signal, let's not get our hopes up yet, as the most likely explanation is something natural that we just aren't aware of. Still, that's kind of cool, man. The project is funded by Russian billionaire Yuri Milner and cosmologist Stephen Hawking. At a hearing this week before the U.S. House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, the SETI Institute's senior astronomer, Seth Shostak, testified on the advances in the search for alien life.
Over the next 20 years, we will be able to look at about a million other star systems, and I bet everyone a cup of coffee that we'll find something. I may have to buy a lot of coffee.
The technological advancements are largely because of computers, and therefore more stars than ever before will be searched high and low, leaving no stone unturned. Well, so then what? Do we search underwater or below the Earth, man? Guess who's the latest celebrity to say they saw a UFO?
After all these years, I've found you.
And who the hell are you?
I'm your dad, Peter.
While promoting Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 on the BBC, Kurt Russell opened up about an encounter when the host asked him and co-star Chris Pratt if they believe that alien beings have visited our planet. Russell recounted an experience with his son while aboard his private plane.
I saw six lights over the airport in absolute uniform in a V shape. We're maybe a half a mile out, and Oliver said, "Pa, what are those lights?" And I said, "I don't know what they are." He said, "Are we okay here?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm gonna call him," and I reported it.
Russell says the airport radioed back that radar did not show any aircraft in the area and logged the sighting as unidentified. Connect with these stories at ParanormalRadio.com. I'm John Jeter. This is Paranormal News.
We're still not sure what timeline he's on. One thing is for sure. Jeremy Scott just won't go away.
Can pick such a licking and keep on ticking.
You're traveling into the paranormal.
With my guest, Dr. Joseph Felser, author of The Myth of the Great Ending. Talking about all the end of times. 818-672-6865. You can call in 818-672-6865, or you can Skype in at Into Paranormal. And right before the break, Dr. Felser was talking about, well, being whipped up into a frenzy for all these things in which do not come true. Is that dangerous, Dr. Felser, in your opinion?
Well, I think it can be. I mean, I remember, you know, the 90s and the, what was it, Heaven's Gate and the Om Shinrikyo and, you know, the Branch Davidians and so forth. And I think people can, you know, lose their bearings. I mean, those seem to be experiments in how to create, you know, terror and authoritarian society. And I think, you know, who knows, maybe they were in part, you know, experiments by someone. But I also want to pick up on something, Jeremy, that you said before. You know,
sure.
Are we heading towards something?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's an important truth there that we're at a point in the development of human consciousness. I remember that Carl Jung, you know, the great Swiss psychologist, he was in an interview, and I guess it was in the 1950s, and he said, you know, that he was being asked about the bomb and all that, and he said, you know, psyche, the human mind, is the great danger. The human mind is the thing that manufactures the bombs. And I think that, you know, we are at a crossroads, in a sense, in the development of human consciousness, that we've come to a point, a very critical and crucial point. And I think we can look toward becoming extinct on the planet, or I think we have to sort of shift into a different direction and with this technology that we have and take a more measured and humane approach. And I think we're at that crossroads, and I think it is a real crossroads. So I think that there are real issues and that there are facts, but I also think that we have a tendency to look at some of the images that come up in these things. You know, Joe Campbell once said that a myth is a public dream and a dream is a private myth. And I think that the images of our dreams and the images of our myths, we need to look at them very carefully and interpret them very carefully. And I think in a lot of cases, when we look at them as metaphors rather than as literally true, I think that they tend to make more sense. So I look at the end of the world as a kind of challenge. Are we going to transform ourselves? And are we going to take this opportunity, this very dangerous time in human history, as an opportunity to grow and to widen our consciousness, or are we going to fall back into a kind of narrowness and destructiveness? So I think, you know, that's an important thing that you were talking about before.
Thanks, Dr. Felser, for that. So how did you, again, I know you kind of touched on this earlier. We've got some new folks who are just joining us. Tell us about what led you into really becoming interested in this topic. And we're really going to get into some of the psychological and other dimensions of this in a moment here.
Interest in the topic? Well, I guess really that does go back to childhood. Like I said, I you know, sort of grew up with this sense that the world could end any moment, nuclear holocaust, nuclear winter and all this. And I was also, as a kid, interested in weird stuff. When other kids were collecting baseball cards, you know, I was reading about UFOs and psychic phenomena, poltergeists and all this stuff. And also listening to, at that time, there were two figures in New York radio, Long John Neville and Barry Farber, that used to be on late night.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have figures on who were interested in these kinds of things. And so I was interested in the paranormal and religion and mythology. I read all these things. So, again, it was like different tributaries feeding into the same stream. And so I was interested in Christianity. I read the New Testament. I read about Jesus' beliefs. I read about Jewish apocalyptic messianic things, and all of these interests just followed me. In college, I was interested in philosophy, but I also took courses in religion, and then maintained that interest as I went through. In fact, my dissertation that I wrote was on philosophy of religion. So I don't think I was ever not interested in these things, but I think as my as I began to watch the some of the actual things that were happening in the world and some of these groups and so forth, and then in, 2000 and then the big thing in 2012, well, I had been working on the book since 2005. I started, actually it was an accident. I had been invited to give a talk, I guess it was in Connecticut. It was a talk on Jane Roberts. I don't know if you know the psychic and trance medium, and her papers and so forth, books are on file at the Yale Library. And I was giving a talk up there, and it was sort of in the aftermath of a lot of this Clash of Civilizations talk after the 2001. Jane was not only a psychic, but she was a gifted writer, and she knew the value of metaphor. And people would write into her and say, I had a vision that the world was going to end. And she would say, well, maybe you shouldn't take this too literally. And so I gave a talk up there on this whole topic of not taking this theme of the end of the world literally, but as a kind of summons to examine ourselves and maybe to transform our consciousness. And a friend of mine happened to be in the audience who was a publisher and an editor, and she said, that would make a good topic for a book. So I said, okay. So I worked on this for about 6 years, and then, of course, it was getting more and more in the news, and more people were getting pumped up about it. But that was all sort of a coincidence. I hadn't really intended to write on something so timely, but it sort of just took me by surprise, and the resilience of the thing was just, both exhilarating and frightening at the same time. So that's basically how it all came about.
And your interest in the paranormal and parapsychology, did you have an event like, did you live in a haunted house? Did you experience ghosts or anything like that?
You
weren't
no.
abducted by aliens or anything strange or abnormal or parabnormal?
I don't think that I had any dramatic experiences when I was a kid. I just always had this sense that there was more to reality than meets the physical eye. I can't tell you where it came from, but as long as I can remember, I had very deep dreams when I was a kid. I had experiences in nature that probably I look back on and say now, I think of them as kind of mystical experiences. It was just a feeling of oneness and so forth. So I was always interested in what you might call the invisible dimension of reality, and whatever spoke to me about this, whether it was religion or the paranormal or mythology, even comic books, it just hit a chord. And I don't remember anything in particular, but I just remember having this sense of there being more. William James, the American philosopher, referred to the more and the more that we are. And I just always had this sense of more. And so whatever spoke to that was something that spoke to me. And I didn't live in a haunted house, didn't come from a particularly religious background. So this was just something that was always with me for some reason or other. Can't explain it. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Joseph Felser, my guest. His website, everythingtriestoberound.com. He's author of The Myth of the Great Ending. And Dr. Felser, is there some sort of message in all this that we are just failing to recognize?
Well, I think the message, I think the message is this. I think that there's a healthy core to all this. This longing for the end, I think, really is a longing for a connection to something, what I was just talking about, the more, something greater. And I think part of it can be viewed as morbid, but I think there's a healthy core to it. And I think, for example, when you look at the shamans, the great shamans who always had visions of destruction, personal destruction and global destruction, but when they came out of these deep experiences, people like Black Elk, they understood that this was speaking about renewal and reconnection and restoration of a relationship to the divine, whatever you want to call it, this the end of time as an experience of eternity, which, as Campbell says, eternity is not a long time. Eternity is no time. Eternity is that dimension of here and now that thinking in time cuts out. So when you speak symbolically of the experience of no time, you know, in the Thomas Gospel, that Gnostic Gospel, the disciples ask, when will the kingdom come? And Jesus says, it's not going to come by waiting for it. It's not going to be a matter of saying it's going to be tomorrow or next year. He says, rather, the kingdom of the Father is spread out upon the earth, and men do not see it. So what the end of time, I think, really means, and I think we've all had experiences of this too. You know, like I said before, when something is unpleasant or boring or painful, it seems to drag on and on and on, and you want it to end. But when you're really absorbed in something fascinating and delightful, it seems like no time has passed, you know? And this is sort of kind of what I think of as an hors d'oeuvre of eternity, that time explodes, and you connect with that dimension that is absolutely outside of time altogether. That would be the divine dimension. So I think that inside of all this sort of fascination with the end, I think, is really a fascination with something that's very healthy and good. And we need it, you know, and we long for it. And people try to get it through all kinds of means. But I think that the longing itself is very healthy.
Actually, on Twitter, we also had Deb mention a quote from Campbell as well. We must be willing to let go of the life we planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us.
Yes, yes. I mean, John Lennon said, you know, life is what happens while you're making other plans. And I think that's true. And so this is, you know, I would say this is the real meaning of it, the real value of it, is this transcendence in which can happen in the present moment. And it doesn't, you know, it's not about time. It's not about a long time in the future. It's about what's going to happen right here and now. So I think that's it.
Dr. Feltzer, let's be clear. Are you saying that we will never be hit by anything apocalyptic, such as like an asteroid or a meteor or some sort of thing, or that really the chances of it are so low that we really shouldn't even worry about it?
Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't be concerned about things like that, or about blowing ourselves up, or there could be natural disasters of a magnitude we haven't seen before. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, as in the Cold War. I mean, there was a real reason to worry, and about what we could do to ourselves, and what could happen as a matter of nature. I'm not going to say that, you know, something terrible couldn't happen to the planet or to us, to civilization. But I think that, and of course we know, someday just as everything is born, that the sun is going to burn itself out, you know, billions of years in the future. So there is a factual and basis for thinking about the end of time. But I think that the end of the world, the end of the universe, however you want to put it, but I think that the main thrust for us isn't worrying, but getting beyond worry. And the way that you get beyond worry is you get in touch with something that is not in time, and we're part of that. You know, part of us is not in time either. And so when we get in touch with that part of us that's not in time, we get in touch with that dimension that's outside of time. And I think that's what the calling is all about. So I'm not saying that something terrible couldn't happen, but I think that if we have that lifeline to that other dimension, then maybe what seems to be awful, what seems to be terrible, mm-hmm. Wouldn't be so terrible, wouldn't be so awful.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a thought on maybe what is the most likely scenario that would play out?
In terms of?
Well, I mean, if the world were to end, you know, tomorrow, what in your mind would be the most likely reason for that?
I mean,
maybe not reason, but how would it occur? Would it be Jesus coming down, and would it be the rapture? Would it be crushed by an asteroid?
Well, I just don't think it's useful to speculate about that. I think the probabilities of any of those things is probably pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, the world, the planet Earth, won't exist. But that's billions of years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And could it happen before then? I suppose so. Certainly, there's no way to say it absolutely couldn't happen. And I'm not trying to say that it absolutely couldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that our fascination with it shouldn't be misunderstood. I think the real value of thinking about the end of the world is sort of like thinking about the end of your life, you know? It concentrates you in the present. And what are my values? What's my purpose in living? What should I be doing with my life? And so I think of the end of the world, I think of that meditation, thinking about it, as a tool to come to a deeper appreciation and understanding
mm-hmm.
of life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my view of it.
Dr. Felser, I want to spend the rest of this hour and into the next hour talking about the various dimensions of end of times, psychological, historical, religious, and philosophical. I know we've hinted on parts of those throughout this conversation, but let's start with the psychological.
Well, I think that the psychological thing, I mean, the thing that struck me is the repetition of the message. And again, I think it has, first of all, it's a psychological fascination. There's a fascination with it. And I think that's natural because we are fascinated with death. We want to know what death is. You know, death is a mystery, this kind of thing. We love mysteries. And so the idea of being fascinated with the ending, of being fascinated with death, I think that's just part of being human. And, the first time that people noticed that all of a sudden somebody was walking around talking and then all of a sudden they were lying on the ground kind of cold and not moving, you know, what's going on here? And so I think that psychologically it has to do with curiosity. What is this? The recurring theme, the fact that we can't, like a tune that we can't get out of our heads, I think has to do with a sort of recurring dream. People have recurring dreams often because they haven't gotten the message. I'll give you an example. I had a student some years ago. We were talking about dreams in class. And he said he had this very disturbing recurring dream where he would be in a graveyard and he would walk over and see a tombstone with his own name carved on it and, you know, the dates that when he was born. And he couldn't exactly see when he was going to die, but obviously he was already dead because he was looking at his own tombstone. So he said he'd been very upset about this. And for a long time, it just kept happening over and over and over again. And he finally started to think about it. He started to meditate on it. He said, what's this all about? It? Because, you know, he was obviously understandably concerned that it was foretelling his death, that it was, you know, literally, you're going to die. And then he started thinking about it, and he realized that he had just broken up with a young woman. It had been a very difficult relationship, and that he hadn't really dealt with it. And so there was a part of him where he hadn't let go. He hadn't allowed himself to mourn and to move on. And a part of himself had died in the relationship. And as soon as he came to terms, I don't remember exactly what he did, but as soon as, I don't know if he contacted her again or what happened, but as soon as he came to terms with all of this, the dream stopped. So the dream had a meaning, but it wasn't to be taken literally. And so I think that the psychological thing about this, why it keeps recurring, again, is because it has a certain power, But I also think that, that when we really get the message and we look within ourselves, I think that's maybe when it will stop becoming a morbid thing and become a kind of inspiration for some kind of inward meditation. So I guess that's my idea about the psychological power of it, both positive and negative.
And the next aspect?
Well, the next aspect, I would say, you know, the sociological aspect, I think we've talked about, and that it's like a it's like, what do you say, a stimulant. It stimulates people's activity. It gives them something to think about, to work towards. Again, in this tradition where it's closely identified with prophetic materials, it's identified with this conflict between good and evil, and the identification with good fighting evil. And so it gives people a kind of group solidarity. We are the good people fighting against the evil. And it gives them a focus and a sense of belonging to a community. So there's a good aspect to that, and there's a negative aspect to that, you know, because then it can become a reason for violence, both against oneself, you know, the suicides, and also against others, you know, like in the Jonestown thing where, you know, there were a whole bunch of people, the Congressman Leo Ryan and others that were killed by the agents of Jim Jones and so forth. So the sociological aspect has a shadow side, a dark side, and a light side. I mean, it does cement people together. It gives them a sense of purpose and identity. And it can also have a negative effect because it can also breed this kind of violence both against oneself and against others. Mm-hmm.
In the final 90 seconds of this hour, how about the religious dimension?
Well, I think the religious dimension is what we've been talking about, and that has to do with transcendence. I mean, I think the end of time as a metaphor for this entry into the what Campbell would refer to as the invisible plane, whether it's thought of as heaven or whether it's thought of as another dimension or simply an energy beyond the physical. And so I think that has a very important aspect to it. So that would be my sense of the meaning of it from a spiritual or religious standpoint.
Mm-hmm. We'll address more about end of times, about the apocalypse, about doomsday, the myth of the great ending with Dr. Joseph Felser, PhD. I'm Jeremy Scott, and after news and weather, we will be right back.
You're traveling into the witching hour on Into the Paranormal.
Doomsday, end of times, the apocalypse, the myth of the great ending. I'm Jeremy Scott. My guest, Dr. Joseph Felser. His website, everythingtriestoberound.com. He is a professor at Kingsborough Community College, the City University of New York, a graduate of Boston University, and received his doctorate in philosophy from the University of Chicago. He's also on the board of directors of the Monroe Institute, which we'll be talking about a little bit later on in the program with Dr. Felser. We were talking about the various dimensions of the problem. Did we address the historical aspect of this, Dr. Felser?
Yes, well, I think the historical aspect of it is the literalization of the metaphor, the concretization of what I think is something that should be taken symbolically is read as a literal reference to a fact that has not yet manifested. So, you know, history in the sense of a future event yet to come. So it's not really, I don't think that the end of the world primarily should be thought of as a reference to something that hasn't happened yet, as a mass event that's going to happen to us. I think it should be rather read as an invitation to bring about, for the individual to bring about something within themselves. So rather than be passive in relation to the end of the world, thinking that it's going to happen for us, I think it's something that we need to intend to bring about. What will end my world in the sense of what will transform me, what will open me up I think what we all really want is that experience of the mystery. And you know, one of the people I talk about in the book is the physicist David Bohm. David Bohm is a quantum physicist. He was actually a student of Albert Einstein, and he was a great physicist. And Bohm himself liked to cite, there's a Polish-American philosopher and mathematician by the name of Alfred Korzybski. And Korzybski used to say, things are always something more and other than what we think they are. In other words, our ideas and our words basically can't capture reality, because reality is infinite. And there's something there that we try to capture that we can't. And that's that mystery. Gregory Bateson, the biologist, used to say, the map is not the territory. And so our words, our theories, our concepts, our ideas are all metaphors. They're all attempts to come to terms with something that's ultimately mysterious. And I think that's the real value of the notion of the end of time, is the notion of getting in touch with something that's beyond the framework that we can imagine, something that's not within our mental boxes, if you will, something that's outside the box.
That makes sense. Yeah, some of the other folks you work with as well, including, or you mentioned in the book as well, Ingo Swann, folks know that name.
Yes, Ingo Swann. He's a famous remote viewer, and he had a vision of the end of the Cold War. He basically was giving a talk somewhere. I think it was in what used to be West Germany, and they asked him to give a prediction about the future. He hadn't intended to. He hadn't thought about it, and all of a sudden he said the wall was going to come down in like 18 months, and it did. So that he was one of the figures I cited about premonitions. The interesting thing about premonitions, and there's another thing about how do we read premonition. Now, I mean, premonitions happen. People, precognition's a reality, and people that say that it's not proved just haven't looked at the evidence. But one of the interesting studies about premonitions was made. I'm trying to think of who it was. The name will probably come to me afterwards. But one of the interesting studies that was done, I think it was Nancy Sandow. That's right, the American Society for Psychical Research. And Nancy Sandow did like a meta study of precognitive experiences. And what she found was that the further away you are from the date or the time that you are predicting, the less likely the premonition or the prediction or the precognition is going to be accurate. So a lot of these long-term, like, you know, people that look at Nostradamus and think that he's predicted something about the future, and a lot of these texts that are interpreted as making literal predictions about the actual historical future, it's very unlikely that they would be true and accurate, because that's just not scientifically what we've been finding. So it means that language has to be understood metaphorically as opposed to literally. And I think that we have to be careful distinguishing between prophecies and predictions and precognitions. And how we read these things, we have to be rather sophisticated. So all language is not equal, is not the same.
Very well said, Dr. Joseph Felser. And, I mean, there's other examples that you mentioned in your book as well, some of the other maybe not so noticeable names, but Robert Monroe had quite the impact on you.
Yes, Bob Monroe, this goes back to, I guess it was the late 70s, I came across reference to the work of Bob Monroe, and he wrote a book called Journeys Out of the Body, which was published, I think, in 1971. And he was originally a sound engineer for radio and became a radio producer, and later on was a television producer and a businessman executive. He had an office on Madison Avenue and in Manhattan. He worked for the old Mutual Broadcasting Network, and he produced classical radio shows like The Shadow, and then in the 50s he was a producer of a lot of game shows and so forth. And he started experimenting in the 50s with sound, and he was interested in sleep learning. And as a result of these experiments, he was experimenting on himself. He began to have these very, very odd experiences. And he was not a mystic. Like I said, he was an engineer. He had he came from a family of doctors. His mother was a doctor. His father was a doctor. And so they were, scientific background. And he was a very pragmatic kind of guy. And one day, he found himself in a very strange, peculiar situation. He found himself seemingly floating outside of his physical body and having what would later be called a classic out-of-body experience. And at first he was terrified. He thought he was going crazy. He thought maybe he had a brain tumor. And then when he went to doctors and had tests, and doctor said, no, Bob, you're saner than I am. Don't worry about it. And he said, well, if you really want to find out about this kind of thing, go to India and go to an ashram and study for about 20 years. and Bob said, no, this is not for me, you know. So he had to go his own way, and he wound up creating, much later on, a technique using sound called hemisync, essentially for inducing very deep meditative states. And some people would have classic out-of-body experiences, and other people would simply go into what would be called non-ordinary or altered states of consciousness and have very interesting experiences. And by and large, he went and created a series of programs that incorporated this audio technology and created the Monroe Institute down in Virginia. And that was back in the 70s. And the Monroe Institute grew and is still in existence. And I became involved with it. I first took a program down there in about 16 or 17 years ago and had some interesting experiences and took more programs. And then became a member of their professional division, did some research, and also recently was elected to their board of directors, which I'm very happy to be on and very proud of. So I've been associated with the Institute for about 16 or 17 years, and it's a nonprofit institute. They're devoted to education and research. And the programs down there are very varied and very beneficial. A lot of people find them to be life altering. So I'm proud of my association with them. Mm-hmm.
And people can find out more about them by clicking on to MonroeInstitute.org.
Yes. And the present executive director of the Monroe Institute is actually Bob Monroe's stepdaughter, Nancy Scooter McMonagle, whose husband Joe McMonagle is a famous remote viewer.
Yes, he is.
Yes. So,
can you get him on my show?
Yes, he's been on the show. Yes, I would think that he would be.
No, I'm saying, can you get him on my show?
Oh, can I get him on your show? Well, I'll talk to him. He's never been on your show. He's been on a lot of shows.
No, I'd like to have him on my show.
Okay, well, I'll talk to Joe. I'm sure.
Can you put in a good word for me, Dr. Felser?
Yes. Absolutely.
I appreciate
Jeremy.
That.
I'll put in a good word for you. I will.
So I mentioned that you're a professor at Kingsborough Community College and City University of New York. What do you teach?
I teach philosophy. I've taught there since 1997, so it's just about 20 years now I've been at Kingsborough. And I teach courses in introduction to philosophy, introductory courses. Kingsborough is a 2-year community college, but some of my students do go on to 4-year schools, and some of them actually even major in philosophy. I teach a course in philosophy of religion, so a lot of these topics that we're talking about, about death and the end of the world, and all these things come up, and students are very interested. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoy it.
Dr. Felser, do you have any thoughts on where we came from?
Where we came from? You mean in terms of what exactly? You mean was it extraterrestrials or that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, I mean, if that's your theory, do you think that extraterrestrials had something to do with our arrival here on this Earth?
Well, you know, it's an interesting hypothesis. I don't know. I don't think I have a particular view of that.
Oh, come on.
I just don't know. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Ask Joe McMonagle about that. Mm-hmm. He has some views about that that are interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Felser, I mean, in that book that Bob Monroe wrote about in 1971, Journeys Out of the Body, tell us about the impact that that had on you.
Well, I mean, it had a big impact because here was someone, when I first read the book, it struck me as being very repertorial, that he was describing his experiences. He was trying not to sensationalize them. He tried to verify his experiences to prove that this was actually happening to him. And the whole thing struck me as being very honest and being very valuable, because he was trying to be take it out of religion and he was trying to take it out of esoteric thinking. In other words, he was really trying to look at his experiences as objectively as possible. So he wasn't using the old language even of astral projection and this kind of thing. He was one of his friends at the time was a fellow by the name of Charles Tart, who was a psychologist, who was one of the early students of parapsychology. And it was Charles Tart who I believe coined the term OBE, out-of-body experience, because they did not want to have it sort of, infected with any kind of presuppositions or biases, and so they really wanted to look at it scientifically and study what was going on and what was happening with human consciousness when these experiences happened. So that was what really struck me about the book, and the value of it was in this sort of objective attempt to look at the experience and just see what it was really all about. Mm-hmm. So you know, I didn't know about the existence of the Monroe Institute until much later on. But when I found out about it, I sent away for some of their tapes that used the hemisync process, and had some interesting experiences with them by my own at home. And that was when I decided that I had to go down there and take a program, and I finally did. So, I mean, it definitely had an influence on me, because it was after I took those programs that I really came to see the value of what he was doing and what he was talking about. So I think that was really important. In my own personal development, that was important. Mm-hmm.
Have you had an out-of-body experience, Dr. Felser?
Yes, I've had out-of-body experiences. And I don't have them regularly, and I don't have them oftentimes they're not dramatically – not the sort of the classic out-of-body experience where I actually see my physical body, but I do have a sense of being out. Mm-hmm. And so that has happened. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you coming on the program tonight. It certainly has been a pleasure talking about this topic with you. Would you have any closing comment for us?
Well, as far as the end of the world is concerned, I think, again, that it's a very valuable idea if it's not taken literally. And I think it's a call, it's a challenge. And I think that if people respond to it in the right way, I think it can be a very very useful and rich, valuable thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you the best, Dr. Felser. It's been a privilege talking about this subject with you, and I look forward to perhaps doing it sometime again.
I'd be happy to, Jeremy. It's been delightful, and I will talk to Joe McMonagle for you.
Fantastic.
Okay? All right. Take care.
Best
Thanks
to you.
For the invitation.
My pleasure. Author of The Myth of the Great Ending. You can find his work at everythingtriestoberound.com, and that is Dr. Joseph Felser. Hey, I'm over on Facebook Live. I've got a green screen up, and you can see me. It's nothing too fancy. Here I am with my headset talking to you. But nonetheless, there is a Facebook live stream up for you if you want to check that out at facebook.com/paranormalshow. Give us a like there. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter at paranormalshow. Next week, of course, we are going to 3 hours with L.A. Marzulli joining the program. We're going to be talking about the Watchmen Chronicles, which is his biography documenting UFO encounters with experiencers in their own words. Also, Ken Pfeiffer, who many of you enjoy, as do I. He's here from time to time every couple of months, and he'll be talking about Mars and the moon, some anomalies that he has encountered, and maybe try to explain those. Also, more UFO sighting reports, and this time we'll focus on those from the Pacific Northwest up in my terrain. And, of course, you can see what is coming up by clicking on paranormalradio.com, just the upcoming shows section, and you'll know what is on the show. Thanks to everybody who's been chatting on the show tonight. Joe telling us that Robert Monroe having quite the impact on him. We've got James, we've got Deb, we've got a whole bunch of other folks as well who are listening tonight on our great affiliates and, of course, on the website, paranormalradio.com. Also, Deb's been really active tonight on Twitter. And we appreciate that. At Paranormal Show, you can tweet at us during the show. She actually says that ever since September of 2015, the blood moon has had some sort of effect on her. And I would say that there is something that I can't really put my finger on right now. Although I do have a theory, and I've shared some of those with you here on this program. And if you missed the early part of the show in which we talked about, well, in my opinion, it was an EMP. There were mass power outages in three major cities of this country. And sure, you can try to explain it. I'm sure you probably can. But in my honest opinion, it is preparations for something. Especially when I recall some of the stories that I have reported on the past couple of months. Emergency communications being jammed. Predictions that we are on the brink of World War III, that we're about to be hit by Planet X. Of course, we've been talking about a lot of those doomsday theories, and you can say, Jeremy, we'll just listen to what we've heard from Dr. Joseph Felser and understand that it is not going to happen in your and my lifetime. And I understand that because that is my opinion as well, that if we were to get hit by an asteroid or a comet or some other thing like that, that there would be no forewarning of that, and I just don't think in my or your lifetime we're going to have to worry about that. Although, of course, if I change my mind, I reserve the right to change my opinion. If I start seeing these things get closer and closer to Earth, obviously I would be a fool not to believe that. But that is my opinion. However, when you add this all up, friends, and this is a perfect song. There is something a-brewing. Do you feel it? Am I alone? Am I just crazy? Let me hear it. Open calls next half hour on Into the Paranormal with you. I'm Jeremy Scott. Paranormal News and John Jeter next.
This is Paranormal News. I'm John Jeter. President Donald Trump sure seems serious about Mars. He told astronauts aboard the International Space Station this week that he wants to put man to Mars on the fast track, maybe even as soon as this term.
Who's ready to go to Mars up there?
We are absolutely ready to go to Mars. It's going to be a fantastic journey getting there and very exciting times.
POTUS spoke with Peggy Whitson, who took the title of most days spent in space. Currently, the crew is conducting scientific experiments, fixing equipment, oh, and turning their urine into drinking water. Oh, wow, man. What's more disgusting, the last part or this one? With a last name of butt and a diet of trees, This story, it writes itself. A 50-year-old from Pakistan, down on his luck, found quite the interesting food group, leaves and branches. Now, successfully employed, you'd think Mahmoud would go back to a semi-normal diet. But no! As gross as it sounds, there must be something to it. In all the years of doing this, he has never been sick. And remember, what goes in must come out, man. Ooh! Connect with these stories at ParanormalRadio.com. I'm John Jeter, Paranormal News.
Into the paranormal, somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
All right, so if you do not agree that we are not on the brink of something, that's okay. We don't all have to agree. In fact, we can agree to disagree. Phones open rest of this half hour, 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. And, of course, Skype into Paranormal. Because when you look at all the factors and you start to wonder, boy, this is odd. Could it be? Because, like I've said, if they're going to do something, if there's going to be an event, we're not going to know. We're just not going to get forewarning. It is just going to happen. And so, therefore, if we're not paying attention to the clues that might be right underneath our nose, I mean, naive is pretty much, being naive is on you. It's not on me. Again, 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. Next week on the program, I told you we're going to be moving to 3 hours, which means we'll start at 6 o'clock on the West Coast. For those of you along the actual coast, if you're in the Mountain Time Zone, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock for my friends in Texas. They're on Valentine Radio. And, of course, in Las Vegas, you can catch the program, same 6 o'clock time zone. In Ohio, it'll be at 9 o'clock, so we'll be starting an hour earlier, which means Father Mike can actually listen to us for an hour and a half before he has to go to bed. he's a busy guy. He gets up and does a couple of services on Sundays, and so that comes early, especially when you're 3 hours ahead of us on the East Coast. So 3 hours next week and every week going forward. Hope to have you along for the show. You know, I mentioned a little while ago that not too many weeks ago that I was having a little bit of a weird paranormal happening, and actually I did not know at the time that I spoke to you that I had just lost a dear friend. I didn't find out until actually 2 days after that program. I don't know if, let's just say, I don't know if I may have heard. I may have feared, because this was somebody that I just wasn't able to get a hold of. And you just get that feeling. I don't know if you've ever called someone and they just haven't answered their phone, or they haven't gotten back to you, and maybe you've tried to ring them on Facebook or send them a message or reach them in any capacity. Just basically call home and make sure they're alive and you don't hear from them. It just is, it's very an eerie feeling. I don't really know how to describe it. Have any of you witnessed that feeling? I have, and it's a very, very odd feeling when you know that something is wrong, and it turned out that something was wrong. I don't know if that explains any of the stuff that I was encountering, the stove that turned itself on, anything like that. But it certainly was very, very odd when I found out that information a couple of days after the program 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, maybe on this tangent a bit too much about something being in the air. But I don't think I'm alone. I think you feel it too. I think you know that something is going to be happening. And I think you know that it's probably going to be happening sooner or later. At least that's my gut. 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. That crazy story that we talked about at the beginning of the program about an EMP, about the cyber doomsday scenario, is legitimate, friends. When you think about something that powerful that it can rock an electronic grid, that it can knock out power in three major cities, imagine the impact. If you take out power in Washington, D.C., I mean, you are interrupting pretty much the entire, well, world, potentially. I mean, if you're dealing with Washington and Washington can't reach its allies, that is a big problem. When you have emergency dispatchers who can't reach anybody on the other end, when you have folks out in the field, those on the front lines who can't reach help back home, that is a problem, friends. It's more than a problem. And when you have all these people predicting that it is going to hit us one day, that we are going to be done and over with, you know, it certainly does make you think. At least it makes me think. And I think that so is somebody in Ohio who we're going to welcome to the program right now. Hello, you're on the air. Actually, you're not quite on the air yet, but you are right now. Hi.
How's it going, Jeremy? It's James in Cleveland, Ohio.
James, Cleveland, Ohio. Not too far from Hillsboro, Ohio, one of our radio affiliates there, a little small town. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Good to hear the show.
I appreciate it. What's on your mind tonight? I mean, are you feeling me as far as something feels like it's going to happen?
For a while now, it feels like something's going to happen. You know, yeah, there's kind of funny feel, funny vibe to things in the air lately, and whether it's stuff you see on mainstream media, whether it's stuff you see not on mainstream media, you know, the paranormal, whatever, anything that we're looking into, you know. And I was going to bring up, you were talking about, like, this. When was this EMP thing you were talking about?
It actually occurred last Friday night. Not last night, but the... Actually, I think it would have been, last Friday night, the 21st.
Was that, like, in California? Was there one out there? I don't remember. I don't know if that was due to, there was, like, I know there was a storm recently out there where everyone lost power, but I didn't know if that was related to that.
San Francisco and Los Angeles and then also New York City. But, I mean, we're talking about a huge part of the power grid there.
Right. I mean, we had the major one where I'm at. I mean, this was back in, like, I would say 2003 or 4, you know, when the whole Northeast Coast went out, which seemed like it could have been something along those lines. You know, that was a massive blackout. I mean, we didn't have power for almost 4 days.
I mean, James, people really freak out when they lose the internet. I mean, can you imagine people without power and internet?
Yeah, and I just had a recent thing like 2 days ago here. Just, you know, normal thing. The power goes out just right down the street from me. A branch fell down, took out the pole, and I mean that was a 4 hour thing, and you know, kids are going nuts, you know, what's going on? It was actually kind of cool because it was just quiet. Everyone just went outside. It was, you know, this time of year, it's lighter out, and this happened at like 8 o'clock. So, you know, we just went outside and messed around, played around, walked around, and there wasn't that electric hum in the air, you know. But, I mean, just 3 or 4 days. I mean, yeah, imagine something major like that goes on. I mean, what do they say? If a grid goes down, it would take 3 months for just to even get somewhat power, and it would take years to even get practical power back to areas. be bad news.
I mean, and really it does, I mean, it depends on where you are, James, because, I mean, the effects are going to be different if you're out in a highly populated area versus if you're in a rural area. Or
I'm
if you're
two nuclear power plants on Lake Erie here. I mean, right in the middle of them.
Or if you're in a multi-dwelling establishment, or if you're just in a single-family home. I mean, the effects are really going to be different. I mean, it's going to fry your electronics if you don't have surge protectors on that. I mean, most people don't have generators.
Yeah, I know. There's one person in my neighborhood that has one. And power tends to go out here for some reason a lot. It's like everyone fired up the, I thought a transformer blew or something, but this was just due to a tree limb thing. But if we get the power out here, one of the main things I wanted to call, though, you're talking about crazy things happening.
Mm, yeah, please.
So just to change it up for a second.
No problem.
I had mentioned to you in the chat about, did you know anything about April 26th and this whole, this kind of whatever.
And yeah, no, that's a new one to me.
A signal got broadcast out on the EBS, like the emergency broadcasting system. And it had something to do about Trump. And this was before Trump even won the election. And it said Trump, April 26th, Trump, April 26th, Trump, April, over and over and over. For I don't remember how long it was, but it's like, I don't know, someone like hacked in and messing around or something. But anyway, I'll tell you what went down on April 26th that's been going on. On that day, there was, which was, let's see, the 26th was like, what, Thursday, I think. And that was the same day.
Wednesday.
Wednesday? Okay, so then that was the same day that the power went out at my house. So it was kind of a weird coincidence type thing. But anyway, so I'm, next day, I'm listening to this whole, like, thing that I didn't really know about. So it's just, there's a couple operations going on. There's one in New York City. It's called Operation Gotham Shield, which is an extra fight involving FEMA and Homeland Security and law enforcement, military agencies, stuff like that. It was like to simulate a nuclear bomb test over Manhattan. And then there also on that same day, there was the entire Senate will be briefed by Trump and his four top defense military, on the situation in Korea at the same time. So, when these weird, crazy things happen, it's always, there's a drill going on. It's like some other thing happening, like 9/11, they were all doing a drill, which they thought was practice, and they got jets flying around. They're like, is this real? What's going on? There's a lot of confusion, So a lot of FEMA. Yeah, so there was like a FEMA thing going on in D.C. and then all that stuff with, North Korea. There's a couple military ships that arrived in North Korea on that same day too. But and that crazy nuclear bomb blast test over Manhattan, in which I saw at when that power was out. I'm like 200 yards away from the lake, and I'm looking out over the lake, and we see the plane fly by, and it looked like your standard two plane, refueling in midair type situation, one right behind it, under it. But the weird thing is, they were two smaller planes, which was kind of odd looking. It kind of sucked. I couldn't, zoom in or anything on it. It was kind of far out. And, it would have been cool to have some binoculars at that moment in time. But those are my little crazy April 26 thing. But there is a whole thing. If you go and do some digging on it, you'll find it all. Mm.
That is a very, very strange scenario, James. Obviously, you kind of think the same way that I do, which is that you can kind of see right through all this stuff and connect the dots. But the problem is most people are blind to this stuff. Most people won't even connect the dots at all. I mean, they're just naive.
It was a kind of a surreal thing. Like, me and my son, we're out there. My two boys were out playing basketball when this power thing was out. And so we're out there. We're looking up. We're just having fun. Like I said, it's still like 7:30. You know, it's kind of sunny out a little bit still. And sure enough, like, he starts asking me this crazy stuff. And he started talking about two random things. Talking about some stuff his teacher, I mean, he's in fourth grade, and his teacher's like bringing up how to spot fake news and crap, you know? I'm like, this is blowing my mind. They did it in a fun, like, LeBron James is going to retire and play football, you know? They did some funny stuff like that, and they're saying, I don't know how, like, things can. So there was that aspect where I was kind of like scratching my head, like in school, you know, like, okay. And then a few minutes after that, he starts asking, he's like, man, what if a UFO? Because we started seeing this plane and airplanes, and then we saw that random weird plane. I'm like, dude, if a UFO, it'd be lights out. But anyway, I'm like, but they wouldn't let, you know, hopefully they wouldn't let one rip inside this country, you know, obviously, but. But anyway, so that was a kind of a weird, surreal round of events at that.
All right, James. I gotta ask you, and then I gotta let you go.
Yeah, I know you're up in the end here.
But what does your gut say as far as you know? What's gonna take us out? Is it gonna be a nuclear war? Is, like, North Korea gonna nuke us? Are we gonna get hit by an asteroid? I mean, what does your gut say? If you had to pick a scenario that was going
to
work,
would be something to do with like a virus, like sick, like virus,
like an epidemic or a pandemic, a pandemic event.
Pandemic, yeah, I think someone like that, something that's invisible. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, you could do like a combo pandemic / EMP blast. Boom, done.
Yeah, wow, a pandemic and an EMP. Wow.
Right, you can't get anywhere, can't get anything, you can't have money.
Well, exactly, you know? I mean, because when you think about it, I mean, if there were an EMP, I mean, the hospitals would go down too. I mean, we all see the opening season of The Walking Dead with Rick, where he wakes up in an abandoned hospital. So good luck.
Yeah, you hate comparing things to that stuff, but it's like, oh my god.
No, it's very eerie to me. It all makes sense.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, mm-hmm. But it was great talking to you, man. I'll talk
absolutely
to you soon.
James. It's my pleasure. Yep. From Cleveland, Ohio tonight. You know, he mentioned fake news, and you know, it is important you know, to spot fake news. But how do you know? How do you know if it's fake or not? Okay, well, you know, I actually had on an earlier program how to spot fake news, and so I think that. If I find out which episode it was, I will reference that, and I'll tell you which episode to go listen to, because it's on that episode, and I don't want to take time that we have left in this episode just kind of rehashing that. But I think it was back in the early part of December. I'll get you that here in just a moment. But here's one of those headlines that came across the pike this week. And it wasn't too hard for me to realize that this was bullcrap. It was bullcrap. It wasn't too hard for me to realize that. And how did I know? Well, because I knew because nobody else was reporting it. That's one of the reasons that I knew. If you are finding this story one place, there is something called an exclusive. And yes, I believe that there are going to be some stories that are broken by some news agencies that are deemed an exclusive that may be only on one source. But you got to consider the source. If it's somebody reputable, like, I mean, it's a big major corporation. Now, you may disagree with me on this, and you may think that they have an agenda or whatnot, but their reputation is on the line. They're usually not going to throw something out there. They may have a slant on the way they report it, but, you know, if a story actually exists, it's going to be in more than one publication. And this story is not. It's a story about Trump and UFO disclosure. And the headline reads, Trump orders complete disclosure of UFO data kept by CIA in Area 51. It is absolutely bogus, friends. It is not real. It does not exist. And actually, the story read, as he spoke to astronauts on the International Space Station on Monday, President Donald Trump ordered the Central Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency to review and release all files concerning space aliens and other unidentified flying objects. Go back and listen to the show, episode 189, December 10th. The air date, it was a good show. Had Peter Robbins, a ufologist, on, along with Keith Lunder from the Haunted Washington State Poltergeist House up in Washington. And we also talked with Lisa Molden on that show about the souls of our presidents. So that was episode 189. And in that show, we discussed how to spot fake news. We had talked about that on a previous the previous program with Carrie McClure and what's her name? I'm really horrible with names. Of course, Chase Kloetzky and Carrie McClure. We talked with them a little bit about fake news, and that was on episode 188, an air date of December the 3rd. I do a lot of shows. You know, I'm well over 200 now, so sometimes, it usually comes back to me, but sometimes it may take a little while. So that's a fake news story. You shouldn't buy it. You shouldn't believe it. Anybody who tries to tell you that that it's happening, yeah, you should just call BS right in their face. And if they wonder why you're being so rude, here's the thing. I think that this is what's the word? Well, it is like a virus, and it will spread if allowed. Which means if something that is not true is allowed to populate, it certainly will pick up steam. Parasite, the name that comes to me. It is a parasite. Because once you plant that seed, it is very, very hard to change people's perception. You know, what irritates me is people spout stuff that is not true, and then others consider that person as reputable and continue to spread that same garbage. And it is a parasite, so knock it off. Just my I'm just going up on my soapbox here at the end of the program. I appreciate everyone coming to the show tonight. It is my pleasure to sit with you on my Saturdays. There are a lot of things that you and I could be doing other than sitting right here and talking about this weird, crazy, and wacky world that we live in. But I hope that you come back each and every week because I open up your mind. I mean, that's my ultimate goal here of doing this program. And you'll get one more hour of me next week when we meet here on May the 6th, to talk with Ken Pfeiffer about Mars, the moon, and UFOs, and with L.A. Marzulli about the Watchmen Chronicles. Stories of UFO encounters from experiencers in their own words. That's next week when we go 3 hours here on Into the Paranormal. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. My sincere thanks to all of you for listening, to my fine affiliates for picking up the program. And if I would leave you with one final thought, support the advertisers on this program. They're what pays the bills. Good night.